And so it begins.
And now, here with an unlimited supply of misinformation, is Mr. Know-It-All.
John, I love your show.
Thank you very much, sir. It's 1:10. This is John Williams. All right, let's get rolling. Lots to do, including a conversation in about 15 minutes with the doctor that performed that amazing surgery. Dr. Kellogg will be in our studio, and it's the sort of thing that makes you feel glad that we have the science and the ability in this country or on this planet that we do these days. That's right after we visit with the CBS travel editor, Peter Greenberg, who I think is at an airport and we have for just a few minutes. Peter, thanks for joining us at the start of the show. How are you?
I am fine, John.
Let's talk a little bit about this new travel ban. It's not for passengers. It's for devices from 10 airports in 8 majority Muslim countries. I didn't see this one coming. Was this in the works and everybody knew about it?
Nobody saw it coming, and it caught us by surprise last night when it was announced by individual airlines, in fact, and we're hearing from a few more, because it's not just the countries, of course, it's the airlines that go to those countries. So if you're British Airways, for example, and you have a flight from Saudi Arabia to London, it applies to you as well, not just Saudi citizens. It applies to anybody flying from those countries to the United States, even if you're connecting in another country. So what it means is, only your personal cell phone or smartphone, perhaps a medical device if you can prove it, that's electronic that you need. Other than that, your laptop, any other electronic device has to be checked in your bags, and that's going to create a lot of chaos and a lot of, inconvenience at the very least.
Inconvenience for sure. Why are they doing this, Peter?
Well, obviously they've gotten some chatter in terms of intelligence, and this is not the first time they've had chatter like this. You may remember a couple of years ago, when they were trying to make sure that people didn't carry their laptops because they thought that the terrorists could basically insert either chemical devices or chemical weapons inside or wire it to be a bomb. But I'll tell you something. We have the technology to detect that right now. We had the technology to detect it 10 years ago. The Germans were great at this. If you were flying through an airport in Germany, they had an electronic scale at the security checkpoints, and they would put your laptop on that scale. They knew from every manufacturer what the exact weight was of every laptop manufactured. And if it didn't meet that specific parameter, you were detained at the airport. They then would ask you to open up the laptop and turn it on to see that it was an operating laptop. It actually took you only about a minute and a half to go through that, and it was well worth it. The technology is there now, but is the technology at these other airports right now? And the answer is no.
What do they think it could have been? I mean, would it have been a laptop, and would it have been a bomb inside a laptop, or would it have been the ability for the laptop to send a signal to do something?
Well, more often than not, it would be what was in the laptop, either as a bomb itself or the ingredients of a bomb that could be then taken out of the laptop and assembled inside an airport, an airline laboratory.
But don't they check for that sort of thing? As it is, we all have to take our laptops out.
Yes, we do. But what's interesting about it is if you put one element of a bomb in a laptop and another element of a bomb that may not come across as that in another, carry-on bag, it might not be detected. The current devices that we have at U.S. airports are doing a much better job at giving the authorities an almost three-dimensional picture of what's in that bag. It doesn't make sure that it doesn't mean that it's happening in the airport in Riyadh right now.
Do you support this then? I mean, we don't know what they know, but this seems to be then a reasonable measure of caution, Peter?
You know what? I can't make a comment on that because I know we have the technology to take care of that problem before you ever get on a plane. We have a lot of knee-jerk reactions. I remember after the underwear bomber, we weren't even allowed to take anything on the plane, not even a blanket. Everything had to be checked. That was just an immediate knee-jerk reaction because everybody thought they'd have more underwear bombers. We're always fighting the last war. I'm not going to second-guess the security authorities in this situation, although I will tell you this. Some airlines are telling us this procedure may be in effect till October. If that's the case, then I don't think they're doing their job. Because they do have the technology to deal with this right now. They just have to implement it.
So, but you're suggesting, though, that U.S. intelligence or some sort of foreign intelligence said that somebody was going to do something on a plane, maybe from these airports or these countries, right?
Apparently, that's the only reason why they would do this fast across this many airports. That's correct.
John had a question on line 11. John, you're on WGN. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi.
I had a story about the fact that we were going to be coming back from Frankfurt through Istanbul in June. And when we heard about it this morning, we realized that I'll have my devices with me. And it's on the Star Alliance flight that we are, Turkish Airlines. So we called United, and I verified for them I was on that flight. But at the time, they knew nothing about it. So to their credit, they checked into it and realized that, indeed, I would be limited on what I was bringing back. So United was able to put me on United flight, and we changed plans. But just wanted to let you know that this severely affected my ability to use the Star Alliance carrier, Turkish Airlines.
When did this happen?
Remember, guys, it's two ways. It does not affect anybody from flying from the United States and bringing their laptop on the plane going overseas. It's only those return flights, and it's not done by carrier. So if United put you on another United flight, it may not have been to that other destination. It applies to any airline flying from those 9 or 10 destinations that have been mentioned back to the U.S.
Yeah.
Right. United was able to get me back from Frankfurt without going through Istanbul. That was my point.
And that's the answer right there.
Yeah. Interesting.
That's Istanbul, I wouldn't have been able to carry anything on my flight. So just wanted to let you know.
Yeah. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks for that. I wonder if they're telling us this is a good thing. I guess people need to know. They'd figure it out eventually. Word would get out. But if you're those bad guys, the jig is up. We caught you, huh?
Yeah, but there's another issue here, too, which I'll just mention because it shouldn't go unmentioned. And that is, from now on, if you're going to go to any one of those destinations or be flying from them, you better pack some additional bubble wrap and duct tape because you just can't pack your laptop in your bag. And you also better make sure you open your bag the minute you get to your destination, because this could be a gold rush for bag thieves. Remember, baggage thieves do not steal bags. They steal individual items from bags. And now, percentage players that they are, there's a very high percentage that almost every checked bag, every other bag of those will exactly have a laptop in it.
Gee whiz, Peter Greenberg, you haven't yet said, but it's better to err on the side of caution. It's an inconvenience, and I 100% support what's happening here.
As far as I'm concerned, the jury is out with me. I err on the side of common sense, and that's what I'm waiting for in terms of security. I'm not going to second-guess these guys, but I am going to say this should be a very short-lived procedure because they have the technology to fix it.
Nice to talk to you, Peter. Travel safe. We always appreciate you helping us out.
You got it, John.
Peter Greenberg is the CBS travel editor. It's 118 on WGN. This is John Williams. That was a really fascinating story you may have seen, maybe not. It's news on the Chicago Tribune website today. Advocate Children's Hospital was able to perform a surgery. The doctor will visit with us in a minute, who removed an extra pair of legs from a baby at the hospital. The child was from the Ivory Coast, was born with 2 spines, 4 legs. How that happens and what happens next, the doctor will talk about in our studio on WGN. In our studio is Robert Kellogg. He is a pediatric neurosurgeon for Advocate Children's Hospital. The story that we have discovered today is that a couple of weeks ago at your hospital, a child's, now I don't even know what I'm talking about. Doctor, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Stop me before I talk again. Also, Ryan Burroughs in our studio from WGN Radio News. Hey, Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing all right. I can fill in some of the gaps for you if you want. We can let him do it, but basically I'll set it up for you. On March 8th, a 10-month-old named Dominique from the Ivory Coast came and had surgery performed at Advocate Children's Hospital in Park Ridge. This child had 2 spines and 4 legs. And it sounds as though it was pretty critical that this be done now, because her heart was pumping to basically keep these limbs going and lungs as well. And that's where the doctor stepped in, I guess.
Pediatric neurosurgeon. So how did you all first find out about this case, this patient?
Yeah. So my partner, Dr. John Ruge, has a longstanding relationship with a charity organization in Ohio. And they send him cases that they identify of children with some kind of a medical or surgical need, and he helps them find a place in the U.S. where they can have that done. They notified him about Dominique's case several months back, and he kind of recognized that this was an issue that we could help her with at Advocate Children's Hospital, because we had all the staff and surgeons and nurses and capabilities in the operating room.
Is this called something where you have 2 spines, multiple limbs?
Yeah, so Dominique has something. It's called a parasitic twin. And hers is actually the most rare kind of parasitic twin. It's called a rachypagus twin. And that term just denotes that the baby and the other partially formed baby were joined at the spine.
Joined at the spine. So was the appearance of the child then just four legs? Would I know that this child had two spines, for instance?
Right. So the appearance of the child is such that she was a normal baby, except that she had essentially everything from the waist down coming out of the back of her neck, essentially.
Wait a minute, I got to think about that. Everything from the waist down.
Here's a picture that we're not talking about like an octopus situation where the child has, four legs down below. It's almost as though someone took a leg, a human leg, and attached it to her backside.
To the back. So you have two legs growing out of the back of the child's head and neck.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's breathtaking. That is so strange.
Yeah, and as I said, it's one of the most rare forms of conjoined twins. You know, there was a case in the news recently of a pair of babies who were joined at the head who had surgery at New York.
Yeah, right.
That's a different type of conjoined twin. In that case, both babies were alive, but in this case, the other baby is not.
Well, in fact, there's no real appearance of another child here, just two limbs growing out of the back of the one.
Correct.
So then this is, I don't know, more complicated or less complicated than what we normally think of as conjoined twins?
Well, it's in some ways yes, in some ways no.
Yeah.
In Dominique's case, she actually... on imaging, we saw that she had a rudimentary pelvis and a small bladder associated with that parasitic twin, in addition to the legs that would move back and forth.
Really? She had control of them?
It's really difficult to say if a 9 or 10 month old baby has control of their legs, but they would move.
Yeah. Was the child otherwise as mentally developed or emotionally content as a 10-month-old would be?
Yeah, she was a very happy baby.
How about that?
Yeah, totally.
Except
normal
for that
baby.
Other thing, and didn't know that this circumstance was so bizarre. Did it cause her discomfort? I wonder if the child was in pain.
I'm not sure that she was in pain, but I think that over the long term, it certainly would have placed her at risk for having developmental delay, because if you think about trying to learn to walk and crawl and all those things,
sure,
with extra weight on your
back.
Well,
when you talk about two spines, another pelvis perhaps, do you remove those too, or will this person live with those vestiges forever?
Yeah. So when Dominique came here, we got MRI scans and CT scans of her to identify the relevant anatomy, and there's a bony pelvis that was attached to her spine, and then there were two spines, and actually two spinal cords. However, we felt that it was not necessary to try to remove the extra spine because we couldn't discern with examining Dominique or looking at the imaging how much of those two spines or spinal cords she actually uses for
her
own legs.
Right, sure.
So the goal of the surgery was to separate that rudimentary pelvis, small bladder, and then all the different connections between Dominique's nervous system, that her spinal cord, and the nerves going to the parasitic twin.
Amazing stuff, huh?
But no parasitic twin, and he clarified this for me in the green room there. There's no heart or lungs associated with this. It's essentially spare parts attached to the body. Yeah,
it's literally an extra set of legs and a rudimentary bony pelvis.
How did it go?
Everything went great. There were 5 surgeons and about 50 clinicians overall that all took part in planning this. And I think the reason that it was all able to go so well is that we spent hours and hours planning this. We met several times as a group, the OR staff, the surgeons, to talk about the anatomy, what our surgical approach would be, what everyone's role once we were actually in the operating room would be. And it went off just about as well as we could have hoped it would.
How long did it take? It
took about 6 hours.
6 hours is all? That must be... exciting is maybe an inappropriate word because it's a grave circumstance, but if you do what you do, this must really be a sort of thrilling challenge, especially when it comes to fruition and it's successful.
Yeah. No, it's one of those things. It's kind of part of why we all wanted to become doctors. You know, you get to reach out and touch somebody in a way that most other people can't. And, you know, hopefully after this, now Dominique will be able to go back to her home and her parents in Ivory Coast and have a basically normal life.
So do you guys become the experts in this now? I mean, is this something like this pops up, whether it be in China or the U.S. or Brazil or wherever, are you the ones they turn to?
I hope they would consider us. I mean, I think at Abbott Children's Hospital, we certainly have the array of skills necessary from the surgeons all the way to the pediatricians and the residents that help, that take care of our patients. And as I said earlier, this is a very rare type of condition.
So maybe not a lot of these are going to come up.
Yeah.
Well, before the surgery, did you all put your hands in the middle and go team or something like that?
Not exactly, but
you might think about that if you
maybe
do that
maybe next time.
You know, I have to pause here for the news. I just had a couple more questions for you about literally how you get that child here. Mm-hmm. Literally, I want to know how expensive this is or how this is funded and a few questions like that. Do you have a couple more minutes?
Absolutely.
Terrific. Dr. Robert Kellogg is in our studio from Advocate Children's Hospital. He's a pediatric neurosurgeon, and you're not. John Williams here. My co-host today, Ryan Burrow, who is from WGN Radio News and was also kind of talking to on and off the air, our guest in studio. So I said, well, Ryan, you know as much about this as I do. Stick around. We're visiting right now with Robert Kellogg. He's a doctor at Children's Advocate Children's Hospital. He is a pediatric neurosurgeon, obviously a subspecialty, right? Does every neurosurgeon have a specialty per se?
Some do, some don't. To get a certain subspecialty in neurosurgery, you typically do an extra fellowship year after your residency training. So I did that in pediatrics. But there's different types of neurosurgery you can specialize in as well.
You told us before the news about a child from the Ivory Coast, Dominique, who was brought to this country a couple of weeks ago, and you and other surgeons there, in fact, a team you said numbered almost 60 people, right, performed a six-hour procedure in which the two legs were removed from a child that was born with four. It was what kind of twin do you call that? A
parasitic twin.
Parasitic twin. How often does that happen in the general population?
That's about one in a million. The specific type that she had where they're joined at the spine is even more rare than that. And there have been literally just a handful of cases reported in our medical literature on that. So to put a number on it, I think would be impossible. It's very rare.
You said there's a charitable Christian organization out of Ohio that sort of organizations know to reach to for these sorts of extraordinary surgeries that couldn't happen in the Ivory Coast. So they found this case, and then they identified you all as a hospital that can do it, and you guys were selected.
Right.
Who pays for all of this?
So Advocate Children's Hospital has a charitable arm, as do most hospitals, and this was all done through that charitable arm. As far as the specifics on how much it costs, I really don't have the information. I would have to direct you to the administration.
Well, what do you charge? Probably 10, 15 bucks, something like that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about all of the people that is involved, this has to be a $1 million procedure.
Well, and I can't remember. I think we talked about this off air a little bit about the foster family that has accepted Dominique and has kind of brought her into this situation. The family's in West Africa, and so they're kind of just getting information relayed back to them. Could you imagine that? How much emotion that has put and stress on them? And in the meantime, Dominique has a family, a safe haven, a home here in Chicago. A family has taken her in, and you know, they're going to nurse her. And this could this be a kind of a long recovery effort, or how long do we think that it'll take for her to go back?
She will probably go back in about a month.
Okay,
she's recovered really, really well so far. She's exceeded all of her expectations. She's starting to do all the normal baby stuff, like roll over and sit up and things like that.
For the first time, I guess.
According to her host mom, so it's all wonderful.
And her host mom said she lost 2 pounds following the surgery, and now she can actually kind of pick herself up more, and she's smiling more, and she's sleeping better. So, I mean, instant improvements in those cases.
Yeah, no, it's wonderful, and it's wonderful to think about just the trust that her parents in Ivory Coast had to place in all of us to take care of their daughter so far away. And it's just been a real honor to do it.
Yeah, well, not to wave the flag or anything, but I mean, really, I'm just so happy that here in this country we have the resources and there are generous organizations that want to do that. Imagine the moment when they realize that their daughter can actually have this corrected and off she goes. How happy that family in the Ivory Coast must be. Mm-hmm. Do we know much about their family, her family?
I personally do not know a whole lot about them. I have not been in direct contact with them. All of our communication has been through the charitable organization, and they're French speaking, so then everything is being translated. I have not been in direct contact with them.
Well, formidable, which is French, I think, for great. Well done. And anything else that we should know, Doc, before we let you go?
I just think everyone should know that this is service performed by Advocate Children's Hospital, and this was a great surgical case that we were able to do, and a great service we were able to do for this child. But we're there every day, and we're doing complex stuff every day. And you know, we just wanted to let people in the community know that we're there. And if you have a problem, we'd love to try and help you with it.
Dr. Robert Kellogg is a pediatric neurosurgeon. Well, congrats to the whole team. Thanks for coming by and sharing that with us.
Thank you for having me.
It's 1:43 on WGN. By the way, did you go to our health fair in the building earlier today?
No, I did not.
You got to go to the health fair. How come you didn't go to the benefits fair?
I get my benefits from elsewhere.
Ah, so you don't need to know about this.
I probably do need to know about this.
Something very strange happened at the benefits fair today.
What's that?
Okay, I'll tell you in a minute. Stay right there.
USA! USA!
I feel so good about what they did over at Children's Advocate, where a child is born with a ghost twin, a couple of appendages sticking out of, my goodness, the back of the child's head and neck, and they're able to remove those and give this child a normal life. That's just amazing stuff.
It was a very cool story, and I didn't know what to expect, and, you know, how much doctor talk there would be in there, but they really did a great job explaining to us what it was that they went in, what appendages were kind of left over from this parasitic twin, and how they had to go in and do it.
He's a young guy, too.
Yeah. Yeah, he is.
He's like 17.
Well, he said he still had student loan payments, although he's a doctor. So
I was thinking about that. I always think about that when I run into another friend of mine as a neurosurgeon, and I think, but he's more my age, so maybe he's paid his student loans, but I just think, oh, my God. You know, I know English majors with $30,000 of debt. Can you imagine if you're a pediatric neurosurgeon and you're young, how much debt you must be carrying? I'm thinking, I don't know, $150,000 or more or less.
Hopefully he'll make that all back up. And if they become the experts in this kind of surgery, who knows? You know, yeah. They could be the worldwide experts in this.
So they did at the health fair they're having here for employees. You know, they said, here's your coverage. And then there's various representative companies are upstairs in the Tribune Tower talking about what benefits we have. So that's a nice thing. One of the groups is a genetic testing. And the company will help pay for some of it, but for $100 or $200, here's what happens. You spit into a vial. They send it to someplace. 2-3 weeks later, they tell you what your predisposition is for 10 or so different kinds of cancer. And I'm thinking, should I do that? You know, I mean, really,
sure.
For $100 or so, I could find out what my predisposition is for all kinds of cancer.
This is actually very similar to what Ancestry.com has done, where you swab yourself and then you send it out and it comes back
right.
And says, you know, I'm
you're Jamaican
30%
or
Mexican
Irish or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so I know that, but that if I came back as more Irish than I thought, whatever.
Sure.
But if I came back with a predisposition for some kind of cancer, you know, for one thing, I don't know what I would do with that. I mean, say it was melanoma, then I might have less sun exposure. But if it's you have a higher incidence of prostate cancer, I'm not sure what I'm going to do about that. Maybe
sure.
Maybe I don't want to know. I don't want that bad news.
Well, I mean, was diabetes one of the things on there? I don't really
I don't
know
think
what
it
they
was.
Are. Okay.
I think they were all just cancers. That they, in fact, I brought some of that stuff in here. Do you want me to look?
Yeah, whatever. You're the one who saw. I didn't go up there, unfortunately. Like I said, I missed that.
Yeah, I don't know if this list, the thing has the list of them on there, but it was just kind of a weird moment. And where I started to persuade myself that maybe I should do this. This is just amazing technology. I guess that's why I'm thinking of it, Ryan, is they said that your kids will have a 50% chance
of
it if you have it.
Sure.
So I'm like, well, okay, I guess I should know about that. I shouldn't stick my head in the sand for the kids' sake.
Well, like we said off air, you know, who'd be really interested in that information is insurance companies, obviously. They would love to know.
But I don't have to share this with my insurance company.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if that's true. I don't know how that would work. Once you have that information, don't you think that would help out your doctor knowing that moving forward?
I think I would be able to share that with my doctor, but I can't imagine that I would be asked, he said, realizing he suddenly sounds naive. I can't imagine that my insurance company would have a right to that information.
Does your insurance company ask you whether you smoke or drink?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Oh, shut up. I don't think that's the same.
This is my belief, and I feel that someday it will be on the checklist, and it may be popping up already. We talked to Dr. Kellogg, who's a pediatric neurosurgeon, who's dealt with football players and people who have had injuries to their brain as a result of concussions. And what if one day when you sit down and you're filling out that paperwork, it says on there, did you play football as a child, in high school, in college? You know, because that's, as we're seeing with these football players, we just learned about Gale Sayers this week. We know about Dave Duerson. We know about Rashan Salaam. Is this a health criteria that is cause for concern for insurance companies maybe moving forward?
Yeah, I don't want to do that. I don't want them to know that. And I don't think it's, I'm not sure it's their business. But, you know, their business, I can see why they would want to know that. I guess it would depend on what form of healthcare we're operating under this country at the time. The football thing is amazing because I have been thinking about it a lot lately. And in fact, I saw a story this week that the NFL, when they're having their meetings, some of the players are saying we need to find a way to preserve the game, but also preserve the athletes. How do we do that? And when you're looking at these Gronkowski kind of guys, guys that just seem like insufferable. You just can't hurt them. They're just like these tanks. They're running into other tanks.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
They're also 20-some years old, and they're making millions of dollars, and they don't want that to stop. So I don't know how you fix that problem.
By the way, Dan, you're on WGN. Hi, what can we do for you? You're on the air. Hey, Dan.
Hi, John.
Hey.
Dan. Hey, welcome back. I'm thrilled you're back.
Nice of you to say.
Anyway, I just jumped on the phone, because you were talking about, issues about... finding out about potential future medical problems and whether you want to know that information. I'm living through that right now. My wife was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's last year, and she was adopted, so the only way to find out about the possibility of inheriting it was genetic testing, which she did, and she did inherit a mutation in her APP gene. So then my children want to know, and two of them have been tested. One passed. It's a 50-50 chance of inheriting it.
Really?
My daughter did not inherit it. My son, 22-year-old frat boy in college, did inherit it. So he's 22 years old, and he knows he's going to die of early onset Alzheimer's.
Wait a minute. How does he know that? Didn't you say he has a chance? It's possible that he won't, right?
No, it's a 50-50 chance of inheriting it, but once you inherit it, it's a pretty much 100% chance.
Oh, wow.
Well, I suppose the race is on then for a cure or some kind of
treatment to delay it.
Yeah.
Well, in his lifetime, it's most unlikely. So he knows he's going to live a shortened life, and he has to figure out how to have children.
How old is your wife, Dan?
59,
yeah. You know, I know somebody in this very similar circumstance that is about that age, and it's just amazing, you know, because physically these people can actually be pretty good. That you wouldn't...
If you didn't know it, you wouldn't know it.
Yeah.
She's completely functional for the most part, but... She's a CPA, and it got to the point where I have a small business, and she was doing all financial. It got to the point where she couldn't balance the checkbook. So she's retired now, but she's functional. She's taking care of the dogs and all that. She's fine. But
So are you glad that you know the information that you know now?
Is your son glad that he knows?
Well, you know, that's a crazy question. My son and daughter both really wanted to know, and my daughter I think is happy, obviously, but my son is kind of in denial. We only found out at Christmas time, so we're still really in the
processing this, aren't you? Yeah.
Yeah, and my other daughter lives in China, and she said she'll think about it. She's not sure she wants to know.
Well, because knowing, I mean, maybe then your son will try and live a fuller life as a young man than. he might have otherwise planned. If he really wants to have kids, then maybe he needs to do it. Maybe he needs to know not to have kids, but at least he has this information. But by the same token, it's going to cloud then, I presume, the days that he'll have. He might have been happier. I'm sure you've sort of done this philosophical conversation with yourself, right, Dan?
Oh, yeah, trust me. I'm the kind that I would have wanted to have known. It really is important, I think. And, you know, so there are options for having children. For instance, they can test embryos
right,
to find out
right.
if he passed it on or not. But, you know, then there comes the question, he's 22 and single, and he's a stud, you know, but he has to, there's the ethical issue that he obviously has to disclose this to any potential mate, and she has to sign up for what the future brings. There's a whole bunch of implications that really make life complicated.
I'm sorry your family's going through this. I really appreciate you sharing this with us. We have to go, but our best to you, your wife, and certainly your son. I appreciate you sharing that, Dan.
My pleasure. Have a good day.
How about it? Real quick, Carol, different kind of topic, but Carol had a theory. I've got 40 seconds, Carol. What did you want to say about insurance companies?
Hi, can you hear me okay?
I sure can. What did you want to say?
You know, back in 1975, I was taking out an insurance policy, and I was asked even then if I did scuba diving or skydiving. And he said, tell me you don't do either. I said, well, I am a certified diver. He said, I'll pretend I didn't hear that.
So, you know. Wait, hold on. This goes to the question about how much of a right do they have to know about our lives. Carol, I'm going to put you on hold. We'll get your number. We're going to do this topic another time. I'm glad you joined us on WGN. We'll talk more about the Jerry Krause passing at the age of 77, the storied manager in Chicago. I'm interested in what maybe a Dave Ennett or somebody has to say about that. We'll reach out to him in a little bit, and maybe you too. Also, we'll, in our 2 o'clock hour, that's where we are now at 2:35, visit with the tech editor for Popular Mechanics. You know, when Kellyanne Conway said the other day that your microwave could have a camera in it and be spying on you, she didn't really mean that, but she was using that as a reference point. But it got everybody to mocking Kellyanne Conway and the administration for whatever that was. I think it's interesting to think for a minute about what is that? How many appliances do we have? How many devices do we have? Your TV set, your smartphone, your laptop, your desktop, your refrigerator, I don't know. How, your car? I mean, really, how much access do governments or hackers have to you? And Popular Mechanics just did a piece about this. Can your refrigerator spy on you? Your microwave is listening to this conversation right now, perhaps, or perhaps not. That's after 2:30. Rex Hubke had an interesting piece in the Chicago Tribune today, and it's predicated, I don't know if he knew the timing was going to be so fortuitous for him, in part on what Sean Spicer was asked yesterday at the White House press briefing.
To your point that all presidents travel, no president has traveled so often and so early to their own private residence.
But President Bush went to Crawford. I mean, there are places.
I get it.
But at the same time, the president's very clearly that he's worked 7 days a week. This is where he goes to see his family. He brings people down there. This is part of being president.
Yeah, I guess it is. And I didn't used to keep score when Barack Obama was president, so maybe fair is to not overly analyze the expenses of safeguarding the president's family in New York or his recreational travel to Florida. Let's not kid ourselves. That's what that is. Rex Hubke wrote about that in today's Chicago Tribune. Hi, Rex. It's John. How are you?
Greetings, John. I'm fine. I'm sitting here being spied upon by several major appliances.
Yeah, I intercepted a text message between your dryer and your toaster, and I don't think they like you, Rex. I'll be honest with you.
No, the only thing that anybody's getting if they hack my microwave is images of me looking happy that food is ready. So that's really about it.
Really, if you did have a camera inside a microwave, all you would see is hopeful, endearing, happy faces waiting for a slice of Malnati's to come out of there.
Right. Popcorn.
Popcorn, yay, popcorn. Do people still microwave popcorn? Because I've taken back to actually, and this is a tangent now, isn't it, Rex? But when
sure,
I cook
yeah,
popcorn at home, I do Orville Redenbach's with a little oil in a big old pot.
Yeah, we have a thing called a Whirly Pop, which is awesome and tastes a lot like movie theater popcorn, only it's healthier, I think.
That's what I want. That's the holy grail. Okay. I want microwave, or I want, you know, movie theater grade popcorn in my home. That's what I want.
You should have that. It's not too much to ask, Cricket. You know,
we're the nation, we're the richest nation on earth, for crying out loud. If our microwaves,
radio host have his own popcorn maker, for gosh sake.
In the newspaper today, you were tabulating in various ways what the expenses are to this country of safeguarding and traveling the president and his family. You pointed out that the conservative watchdog group, I'm reading from your column today, Judicial Watch, estimated Barack Obama's travel costs over his two terms was about $97 million, $12.1 million a year. By any measure, the Trumps have cost our taxpayers already what Barack Obama and his family would cost in a given year. We'll far eclipse that over the course of the next 10 months or so. And in fact, if you want to go even further, people are then comparing the cost of the Trump family to things like the NEA budget and things like that. And to be honest with you, I'm fascinated by this. I've been looking into this a little bit myself, and then your piece popped up, Rex. And I think a place to start is this fair? In a country that has trillion-dollar budgets, millions of dollars expenses to safeguard the president and his family is maybe an expense that we should all bear. What do you say to that?
Yes, I absolutely agree with that 100%. Now, the reason that I felt like it was important and relevant to bring this up right now was twofold. Protecting the president and his family can be done in many different ways. Now, you want to look at the costs for the Obamas involved vacation time when they were actually taking vacation, which every president should do. And people actually liberals made a lot of hay about the fact that Obama took less vacation days than George W. Bush did, and they criticized George W. Bush for being down at the ranch too much, which I never liked that. I thought that was silly because I think presidents should have time off, whatever. As long as, you know, they're not clearly not doing their job as president, then they certainly deserve that time, and of course they deserve the protection that comes with it. So that's fine. But what we're talking about here, the trips that Trump is taking 2 months into his term, already five times to his resort in Mar-a-Lago, are completely, that's not really vacation time. I mean, these are sort of unnecessary trips, really. I mean, this is not him taking vacation. This is him apparently feeling more comfortable there.
Well, okay, but that's interesting because if it were vacation time, you'd feel more comfortable with it rather than him working at a remote location. Ostensibly, he's there working. So I would think you would champion that more than if it were a vacation.
Well, no, because this is costing an enormous amount of money. I mean, if Barack Obama – okay, let me back up because Barack Obama was not taking five vacations within the first 2 months of his presidency, nor was any other president ever. So, see what I mean? I think there's a difference. I mean, this is costing roughly, according to the Washington Post's more conservative estimate, roughly $2 million every time he goes down there. And that doesn't include the fact that anybody that wants to see him on the weekends, for example, Ted Cruz and Mike Lee,
Vice President Pence.
Yeah, but you're right, exactly. They all three were down there this weekend. Well, that means all of they're not paying their own freight to come down there. I mean, this is costing a lot of money.
And, oh, yeah.
And the second reason, the thing that gets under my skin about this is that President Trump made an enormous deal out of the fact that he is very rich. He said over and over, talked about his massive wealth and billions of dollars he has made. Now, we don't, of course, know the exact amount that the guy has, at least liquid or anything like that, because we don't have really any idea about his financial background because of the taxes and stuff. But anyway, this was a big thing. He talked about this over and over again. He said repeatedly that he would hardly ever leave the White House because, you know, there's so much work to be done.
He said he would not be golfing. He was critical of Barack Obama's golf habit. And he said, I would never have time to golf. I'd be working so hard for you.
Exactly. And now, Melania Trump is in New York City still because they don't want to pull Barron out of school, which, again, I respect that decision. But why is the guy who says he's worth $10 billion not offering to pay some of this. I mean, again, even just from a PR standpoint, it would be a very magnanimous gesture that I think people would appreciate. But he's not. This is all coming out of
taxpayer. It came up the other day, in addition to the comment that we just played from Sean Spicer, and they did note that he is not taking a salary. They said several members of administration are working without salary.
No, actually, Donald Trump is taking a salary. There was a Washington Post report.
Oh, that's right. He has to. Okay, but only because he has to.
Well, but yes, and there's also the promise of a yet-to-be-named charity that money will go to at the end of the year, which also gives the back benefit of him being able to take a sizable tax deduction on a donation.
Well, all right,
that's another story.
Fine, but the job doesn't pay what it's worth. I think that in general.
Oh no, I don't. Yeah, not at all.
I mean, you and I hope we're at least at the same starting point that presidents should be able to travel liberally to work or to play. They should have every protection that they feel they need to have afforded to them, the possible exception being his two adult sons who are doing private business on his behalf and are also enjoying a Secret Service detail. But by and large, they should be able to travel. They should have every protection they need. I think what you're asking, though, is for him to, you know, pay part of that cost. For some reason, it reminds me a little bit about the conversation in the Sun-Times on Saturday, where they just wondered if maybe the Cubs should help pay for part of the costs of that the city had to bear because of their postseason run. Parades, extra security detail, more games, stuff like that. It was $19 million. Should the Cubs have to pay for some of that? Most people, I think no. And I think it's almost unfair to say, well, what if he wasn't super rich? Would you then say he doesn't have to maybe pay some of the freight for caring for him and his family?
I think that would be a difference. Again, he's the one that made this a central issue to his very persona is his wealth and you know, that sort of thing. So I think that's an important point. And also is the fact that he was unbelievably critical of President Barack Obama and his travel and his golfing and all these other things. So, you know, some of it is just the chickens coming home to roost a little bit.
I know it is, but go ahead.
I'm sorry. And we're also, again, we're 2 months in, and this is, I mean, the expense of all of this in the first 2 months of this presidency, when frankly, I think one could objectively say things are not going particularly well for him, I just find it all very questionable, personally.
Well, it's not going very well if you don't like a fine-tuned machine. I don't think I need to play that soundbite for you.
Yes, it's a fine-tuned machine.
Evidently, you don't like fine-tuned machines, Rex Hupke. What's the matter with you?
I am a...
This is a fine-tuned machine.
I'm clearly an un-American, as somebody referred to me in an email today.
Really? Really? I mean, that this is going to borrow you trouble because I think it's a very if you want to fight fire with fire, go ahead. But I think you're playing the game that you don't like to see played, and that is let's nitpick the private expenses that the president brings to the country because I don't like this president.
No, I don't. I mean, I understand what you're saying, and I recognize that when I was deciding whether or not to write this. But the other factor here that I think gets overlooked a lot is that every time he goes somewhere, it's to one of his own properties.
Yeah.
And that is, okay, the initiation fee at Mar-a-Lago on January 1st went from $100,000 to $200,000. And by all accounts from his children, the Trump brand is hotter than ever. And so every time he's going to these places, he is lining his own pockets. And if you don't believe that, you're kidding yourself. So again, that's another thing. You look at George Bush going down to his ranch in Texas. Okay, that's his thing. He has nothing to gain from that. But Trump, every time he goes to one of these places, or every time we pay for his son to go to Saudi Arabia to open up a new golf course or something, that's an entirely different thing. And this is a big factor that I think, I mean, look, we're in a torrent of just news and just constant stuff coming out that's odd and very much not normal. And so a lot of stuff is getting swept under the rug. And I think that's a really important point in all this. Barack Obama didn't go anywhere that put money in his pocket in terms of his businesses or anything like that. But Donald Trump is absolutely making money. I mean, there's even, you know, people... the protection in New York City is they're talking about renting out a floor of Trump Tower.
It's $1 million a day. If that's what they say. I don't know. To be honest with you, I think these numbers are a little funny too. And I'll give you an example of why in a minute. Do you have another minute for me, Rex?
Yeah, sure, no problem.
And by the way, Rex, all my phone lines are ringing. It may be something you said. Actually, I have one open phone line now. It's 312-981-7200. I'm John Williams. This is WGN. Rex Hupke's on the phone line, the columnist for the Chicago Tribune, who today had a fascinating piece about the cost of the Trump family, both taking care of Melania and the son Barron in New York, but also how much does it cost for Donald Trump to go to Mar-a-Lago as often as he does? And many estimates suggest that it is equal to the annual budget of the national, the NEA. It's already in 5 weeks been more than it costs to accommodate President Obama in a year. I'm asking Rex to talk to us a little bit about what those numbers are, and then what do we do with them? You know, how do we process that? Is it fair? What are the comparisons, et cetera? This is the point I was going to make before the break, Rex, that I think here's what happens, too. You say, well, okay, if they flew down an Air Force One, sure there was fuel costs, but by and large, that plane exists. Those pilots are on payroll. So it's not like somebody's being charged by the hour. But that's what we do. We prorate the cost of, say, Air Force One or various federal expenses and then apply it to the days that the Trumps use them. But those were not new costs. Those were costs that we were already bearing. We just assigned them to Trump in this case. Do you think that's how the numbers get so large? Otherwise, how does it get to millions of dollars already?
Well, you're talking about, moving a president from any place to another place is a massive undertaking. You're talking about hundreds. The security requires it. And you've got to activate. In the case of Mar-a-Lago, they have this Coast Guard is activated, to protect the shoreline. And
okay, but no, think about it. The Secret Service people are already getting paid. The Coast Guard is already getting paid. It's not like they went and got a new Coast Guard.
No, I know, if he's sitting in Washington, D.C., yes, they're all getting paid, but you don't have all the extraneous costs that come with having to house people, feed people, as well as gas, which is one of the primary costs of Air Force One, or not gas, but fuel.
Sure.
So, when I looked at the different estimates out there, I thought that the Washington Post did the best job of actually breaking it down because they relied on a Government Accountability Office report that had been generated for one of Barack Obama's trips from D.C. When it was first reported by Politico just used that GAO report, which is about $3 million. The Washington Post looked at it a little more closely and felt like that wasn't fair because Barack Obama's trip included a leg to Chicago where he gave a speech, and then he flew from there to Palm Beach for a weekend, and that was vacation time. And the total cost was roughly $3 million for all of the various security, for the jet fuel, for blah, 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 the whole nine yards. So what the Washington Post did was basically remove the costs of the Chicago leg and look at it relatively conservatively. Again, it was not, there's no precise way to do this until we see a GAO report of one of Trump's trips. But it put it, I thought, rather conservatively at $2 million for the trip, for the weekend. So that I thought was fair. And the same thing with the New York City, one of the reports out there says $1 million a day. That's according to some New York City officials, but that seemed really high. And so, again, when the Washington Post kind of looked at some, they took a couple numbers of the costs of taking care of a spouse of a sitting president and this few other things, and they put it at about more like around $200,000.
Yeah,
which I thought, again, I felt like that was more reasonable. And then writing the column, I thought go with the more. I wanted to use the
to your credit, lowest, you use the lowest possible number. I still think those numbers sound high, but all right, let's pause on this point and just pick up a couple of phone lines. We'll start with Kathy. I appreciate your holding, Kathy. You're on the air. What did you want to say?
Okay, first I'll say I'd like to have coffee with your guest or president. I agree with him completely. Also, now years ago, I think 1920s, we had a gangster, Al Capone. He wasn't put in jail because of his being gangster. He was put in jail because of his taxes. Now, we have the IRS who are doing his taxes. If they found anything, like say he has claimed that he does not have any properties in Russia or different places, if they found something that basically was not true with what he said, do they have an obligation to tell us? Because he basically lied, whether he wrote it down or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question. It's a little off topic, but do you have a comment on that, Rex? Rex, I'll tell you what, Rex, we dropped off. Is Rex back on line 7? Okay. Yeah, Rex, were you able to hear that question?
No, I apologize. My the line dropped off. I apologize. I didn't hear the question.
The caller was just wondering if the IRS has an obligation to tell us what they find out about his finances. I don't know the answer to that question. Do you?
what they find out about his, you mean when he files his taxes?
Yeah, we'll say when the audit is complete. But I don't know that, and if they discover a crime, say there's something that he wasn't reporting legally or fairly, do we all have a right to know that?
I don't know the answer to that question. I mean, as far as I know, he's not being investigated by the IRS into any kind of any kind of criminal sense. So if it's just an audit, then it's going to be up to him.
Whether or not he wants to release him.
He keeps talking about, when he wants to release him. So that still remains very unclear. Spicer was asked the other day about whether he would be releasing this year's tax returns, and he dodged that question. So I don't know what to expect on that.
Let's pick up one or two more lines if we can. Then we got to get into the newsroom. Patrick, jump in here. You're on WGN. What did you want to say?
Yeah, hi. excuse me. Good afternoon.
Hey.
It's already touched upon about the when President Bush and President Obama went to their residence, that those were expenses that were paid, but they didn't go directly to the presidents. Now, when he goes down to Mar-a-Lago, the Secret Service stays on his resort. Secret Service stays in the Trump Tower. And we, the taxpayers or the government, however you want to phrase it, is paying that and is going into his account. It's going to the presidents and are going to Trump Corporation or whatever. And that, to me, is the issue. It's not about how much time they spend away from the White House. I think we all agree that the president never is off duty. But now, all of a sudden, he's using this as a way to line his pocket.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, he could operate 300 days out of the year down there if he wanted to. He'd get rich in the process, right?
Right, right. I also like to make a comment, too. I remember when President Obama was first elected, and they're trying to create this age of Camelot again. And remember, they were going to have date night on Friday or Saturday night. As a young couple, they were going to have date night. I think they did it once. They went out to New York City, and everybody went crazy. Like, hey, why are we paying for this? Now, all of a sudden, we have three residents for the president, one in New York, the White House, Mar-a-Lago. I mean, when does the hypocrisy stop?
Right. If it were just to be considerate, then the president would. I wonder if he's paying attention to this. Forget the money. But if he just goes, wow, the people that live around those two properties are enormously inconvenienced. Maybe we shouldn't do that so much.
Yeah.
Thanks for the phone call. Thanks, Patrick.
Thank you.
Appreciate you joining us. And Rex, we're out of time, but you've been diligent in your following the President Trump team. And so many different things. I sure have enjoyed reading you, and I hope you come on again.
I would love to. Always good to talk to you, John.
Thanks, Rex.
And
yeah, Rex.
And we'll see you at Mar-a-Lago.
Oh no, you won't. All right, bye, Rex.
I'm crowdsourcing an initiation.
Hanging up on you now, Rex. Goodbye. That's Rex Hupke. Thank you, Kim. This is John Williams. As you said, former Bulls general manager Jerry Krause passed away, 77 years old. We asked Dave Ennett for a few thoughts about this. Hi, Dave. How are you this afternoon?
Good, John. How are you?
Good. How will we remember? Maybe it's too soon to say just now, but I guess folks will start processing this. What do we remember, or how will he be remembered?
Well, I think that as time goes on, he's going to be remembered as a guy who did something that is extremely difficult to do. He was the general manager for six championship teams. And, you know, I guess the blessing of having Michael Jordan on the roster when he was hired as general manager by Jerry Reinsdorf was also in a way a curse for him, because I don't think that he ever got the full credit for putting those championship teams together, because everyone said, well, he had Michael Jordan there, and who couldn't win a championship with Michael Jordan? But he still had to put the team together. He didn't have Scottie Pippen. He didn't have Horace Grant. He didn't have the other pieces of those championship teams when he arrived on the scene. And he was the guy who put those teams together.
That's interesting. I mean, it's not just to have a superstar, and it's not to have a lot of superstars. What you need to have is the right mix of players around one or two superstars. Ask Oklahoma City or some teams who've benefited from great players but still weren't able to win a championship.
No question about it. And would Jordan – I mean, look at players here in Chicago who didn't win championships. Ask the families of Ernie Banks and Ron Santo. Just because you have great individual players doesn't mean you're going to win a championship. And he was able to find Scottie Pippen and Horace Grant in that 1987 draft.
Yeah.
He made other moves along the way to bring in key pieces, whether it was a Luke Longley or Tony Kukoc, or you can name them, but those were guys that Jerry Krause went out and got. He wasn't a beloved figure as far as the players went, and I think that probably hurt him in the minds of a lot of people. And you know, you can't deny his ability to put a championship team together just because he had Michael Jordan. He's a guy who I think, and a lot of people have said this, belongs in the Basketball Hall of Fame, but hasn't managed to get there yet.
I know you'll be talking about this tomorrow with Steve Cochran. Jerry Krause passed away at the age of 77. Nice to hear your voice, Dave. Thanks for jumping in here for us for just a couple of minutes. We'll listen for you more tomorrow morning.
Anytime, Johnny.
That's Dave Ennett. This is WGN. 244. All right, let's...
There was an article this week that talked about how you can surveil someone through their phones, through their certainly through their television sets, any number of different ways, and microwaves that turn into cameras, etc. So
let's segue here. This is the topic we had on tap, but we needed to do a little Jerry Krause time. We'll make the remainder of our time for Alex George, Popular Mechanics tech editor. And Kellyanne Conway said that, you know, she was speaking figuratively, but they could be watching you through their microwave oven. Everybody said, ha, 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 that's ridiculous. Maybe it is. But it sure does make you wonder, really, how sophisticated is the technology? And Alex George at Popular Mechanics said, well, it's funny you mention that because we've just done a piece on that. Hey, Alex, it's John, and you're on in Chicago on WGN. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you joining us. How sophisticated is it? How broad is it? I mean, first of all, they can't watch us through our microwave ovens, right? There's no cameras in microwaves, right?
Correct. That's really what she meant. That's real nonsense. Microwaves don't have the capacity for stuff like this. But overall, she's not saying something terribly controversial by acknowledging that internet-connected devices, things with a camera and a microphone and access to the internet, they can be compromised and used in ways that, you know, to survey people or, you know, actually otherwise obtain data from people.
What did you guys write about? What did you all discover?
So this was an experiment we did for an upcoming article where we had – so these people who research this kind of thing, who are – you know, they're cybersecurity researchers, which they don't like to be called hackers, but they more or less take the position of a criminal and look at a device. We had them look at a smart refrigerator, a smart slow cooker, and see if they can find vulnerabilities in them and see which ways they could use to exploit it. We had them look at it. They found ways in with them, but the thing to understand whenever you read a report about, you know, webcams being compromised or other internet-connected devices being compromised, this is a typically researchers who are doing this in a very controlled environment, and the lesson is it takes a lot of work to be able to figure that out. When you hear stories about a car being taken over, that's the result of a lot of work and a lot of research going into it and a lot of really sophisticated equipment.
Yeah, it'd be easier just to shim the door and steal the car, right? You don't have to use Popular Mechanics to figure out how to do that.
No, absolutely not.
Didn't Mark Zuckerberg, you told me earlier today some story about how he sort of tipped the world that he's worried about this too.
Correct. So I think it was in June, but summer of 2016, this photo surfaced. It was kind of a playful photo of him at his desk, but you could see off to the side. And when this photo came out, people were dissecting like crazy, but it was pretty obvious that he had a piece of tape over the little webcam that was on the top of his laptop. You know that little camera that's at the top?
Sure, I'm looking at one right now.
He had put a piece of tape over that. Now, that is on the very far end of a little bit of paranoia there. But the idea that it alluded to was that it is possible to take over something like a web camera or something like that. In fact, you know, there are ways that you can look on the internet to actually find places that have compromises like that. But what his situation basically alluded to that is relevant here as well is that if you are a world leader, a president with sensitive information, you play by a different set of rules. You play more conservatively with your technology.
Well, all right. So the only thing maybe that you could get from a household appliance, maybe if it does have some sort of computer, you know, modules in it, somebody with a lot of effort could tell what if the appliance is on or something like that.
Yeah, not super sensitive information. I talked to a guy who's a responder when, you know, major compromise happens or major hacking attack happens, and he works at one of the big cybersecurity research companies. And he said the conclusion was that hackers haven't really figured out a way to profit from this, which is more for people like you and me.
Well, that's right. I mean, imagine if they came up to me and said, hey, listen, I got the goods on John Williams. I can tell you when his refrigerator ice maker was working. I swear to God, this is good information. Who's going to pay for that?
Yeah, or if he's going to maliciously overcook your steak or something like that.
All right,
there's
no real
way to make use of it that
way. Okay, so if my washer and dryer, all of those appliances that we're chuckling about, I don't care if they can tap that because you're right, there's no reason to. But wasn't there a report that also said your smart TV might give the NSA a way to look back at you or listen to you? That's right. If you can talk to your TV or talk to a device, it can listen. That's kind of accessible technology, isn't it?
For sure. And that particular one, if you look deeper into it, that got blown a little bit out of proportion about the Samsung TVs. But the general trend it alludes to is things like if you've ever used an Amazon Echo or a Google Home, these kind of smart speakers, the way they work is they have an always-on microphone that is listening for an activation word. When you say Alexa and then give it a command or OK Google. And people worry about that because does that mean that it's always listening? And the response, I've asked Amazon, I've asked Google about this, and the thing that they say about it that I think Samsung is responding with too is that it's they have these functions, but it's not constantly pulling data. It's not constantly recording this way. People outside the company won't be able to get a very definite answer into those things. But I think that's the general worry about being recorded in this way. It'll come with the territory for a lot of these things, especially as they get more and more voice activated.
Yeah, right.
The claims for that, I think about this a lot, and it's my job to think about whether somebody should worry about it. It doesn't seem like that big of a threat to me.
I understand that, but I also think in general we need to sort of prepare ourselves for what the future looks like. Alex George is on a phone line, Popular Mechanics tech editor. He'll take your question next, 312-981-7200, WGN. A couple of more minutes with Alex George, tech editor at Popular Mechanics. We're talking about, can your microwave oven spy on you, or whether appliances, what sort of technology is there out there? And while the microwave oven thing is kind of silly, I think we do need to understand, right, Alex, that privacy as we once knew it is no longer, heck, if you do a Google search on something, suddenly your Facebook page has ads for those things, you know?
Oh, for sure. And this is the case with pretty much anything that's usually wireless and convenient, that there are concerns about some things like this. And I think that, it is something that people have to consider, especially if they're in a position like the president or somebody like that. And there are also measures that you can take as a civilian to help yourself stay safe and work on your privacy and not be overrun with ads and spam and all that stuff. But it's in general, it got a little bit blown out of proportion, but it definitely is an issue that we watch a lot closely at the magazine. I think it's something that should be at the forefront of people's minds, thinking about the way, car maintenance might have been more recently.
What do you mean by that, car maintenance?
So there are things like keeping, changing passwords and having long and complicated passwords. They're a huge pain, and we're waiting for the day when people figure out, how to authenticate things and actually make it convenient.
Yeah.
And beyond just using your thumbprint as a supplement, that kind of a thing. But until then, that's part of it, is really making sure that you have solid passwords, that you've changed them. In particular, not using default passwords or really simple ones, something like that. And also the same rules of being suspicious of emails, that kind of thing. Those all still apply.
Well, I have a theory about this. Do you want to hear what my theory is?
Please, absolutely.
Here's where the future is going, Mr. Tech. It's chips embedded in people's skin under your thumb, and it will have all of your usernames and passwords there, your social security number, your credit card, everything. And you can change it or they can change it for you, but now you don't have to remember it because I'll just put my thumb up to any device and it will recognize the code embedded in the chip, embedded in my body. Your thoughts?
Not very far off. I think we're closer to it than you might even think. I have the new MacBook in front of me, the one that has the kind of touch bar on it.
Yeah.
My wrist, I have the Apple Watch. And when you walk up to the computer, instead of, say you have it locked, so you have to put in your password when you come, or even using the fingerprint scanner that's on it, you hit the space bar, it wakes up, it reads that your Apple Watch is nearby, it has the authentication there, it knows it's you.
Well, I was at, Midway or O'Hare, I was at an airport recently, and they had biometric scanning for people that wanted to go through the line more quickly, and that was pretty cool. Let me just take one quick call here for you. That's Kate, you're on WGN. Hi, Kate, what was your question or comment?
Yes, Yes, thank you. You know, remember years ago there was a movie, Big Brother's watching, and people go, oh, that's so crazy. I mean, it's here, you know. But I truly believe that the CIA and the FBI and that did, in some way, listened in and was on Trump. Look what they did with Angela Merkel, and that the CIA and the FBI can cover up their tracks so easy. Do you know, my daughter-in-law's uncle worked for the FBI, and you can get a letter. They have a tool they can stick in the side, crank that letter so tight, take it out, read it, and put it back in, and you don't know they ever touched your mail. Hmm. There is so, he was telling us this stuff.
Okay, hold on a second, Kay, because I'm out of time. And that's a topic that we will pursue with our guest on another day, but I'm out of time here. Alex, this is fascinating stuff. I sure appreciate your time with us this afternoon.
Glad to talk to you. I love talking about this stuff.
Yeah, he's good at it, too. That's Alex George with Popular Mechanic. That wraps it up on this show. By the way, I was glad that lady called in just at the very end of our program today. Anna, you're in the studio. Ro's going to join us, too.
He is.
Ro, are you over there? Hey, Ro, how are you?
There he is.
Be better.
She said, I absolutely believe that Barack Obama, the CIA, the FBI tapped Donald Trump's lines. She's convinced that it happened.
And there's that thought out there that, you know, from what we heard, from what the NSA has been up to and elsewhere, people still, they have that belief that that is what happened. That is not what the FBI director said has happened. But we will see what happens with the rest of that investigation. Also, as you know, in Washington, we've got the Neil Gorsuch confirmation, Senate confirmation hearings underway. Senator Durbin, our own Senator Dick Durbin, grilling him quite a bit.
Oh, was he today?
A bit, yes. Some very difficult questions. I'm sure you were watching Ro, and it's yes. He's some very pointed questions.
What's interesting, I want to go back to that lady for a second, though, because I think that that's a situation where you cannot ever convince people who believe something so firmly that there are systems in place that are adhered to pretty vigorously. I mean, if you believe what they say they're doing, you could have a rogue organization, you know, do anything at any given time. But that doesn't appear to be the case. And you've got people of goodwill who are going up there who are sworn to do these things who don't want to spend the rest of their lives in prison because that would be the penalty for misusing that stuff. And they do. They do prosecute people who do the wrong things, whether it's in, you know, the Secret Service. You're seeing that now. In the FBI and things like that. I just think it's this idea that all of this is going on, that they're listening to Donald Trump. Believe me, if they were listening to Donald Trump, more stuff would be coming out, would be my guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no kidding. It sounds naive, because I guess it is, but I don't want to live in a world. I do not want to live in a world where Barack Obama is ordering somebody to, or somebody's doing it rogue and they're in the CIA or the FBI. Maybe that's happening, but my sort of default is that's not happening. And the onus
that's
is
right.
on you to prove to me that it is.
That's right.
Not to prove the negative, which is what a lot of people do on the internet. Yeah.
Have a good show.